Hello and welcome to This Day in Esoteric Political History from Radiotopia. My name is Jody Avergan. This day, March 1852, we wish a happy birthday to Uncle Sam. Of course, Uncle Sam is a fictional character and his origins are a tad murky and shifting, but this is basically the date that we can call his birthday because this was when a cartoon by Frank Ballou made its debut in the New York Lantern Weekly. The cartoon featured a character, Uncle Sam, which I think you would probably recognize him if you looked at him now. It's basically looks like the guy who we now know as Uncle Sam, but it was based on a man who supplied food to troops during the War of 1812. We'll get into that origin story and how it flows into the cartoons that then appeared throughout the second half of the 19th century. And then, of course, when this character really lodged itself into the public imagination with those I Want You, Uncle Sam posters in World War I. Listeners, can you feel him pointing at you right now? The guilt trip of all guilt trips. I want you to welcome my co-host for this show, Nicole Hemmer of Vanderbilt and Kelly Carter Jackson of Wellesley. Hello there.
Hello, Jody.
Hey there. Love that.
I was thinking about it this morning, and I suppose that's supposed to be what it is, but I never thought of it as like a guilt trip, but it kind of is. It's also a rallying cry, but it really is kind of a guilt trip. But we will get into that. And really, you know, as I said, that is the moment where I think Uncle Sam and the image of Uncle Sam is really solidified. But I was struck a little bit by looking at this original cartoon from 1852 that the Uncle Sam character kind of does look like roughly the Uncle Sam that ends up on that poster, you know, 60 years later or so. Yeah. What do you think?
He looks kind of scary.
A little. Yeah, that's true.
He looks like he has this grimacing sort of look on his face. Still has like the top hat, you know, but
and the stripy pants, right?
Yeah, and like really weird bone structure. Like his face almost looks skeletal, but I don't know. I mean, it's interesting because when I think about these, we talked about the illustrator, Thomas Nast. And I associated him with the Uncle Sam Wants You and all of that moment or that era of illustration. So I was like, oh, of course Nast did this. Mm-hmm. And he's actually not the illustrator, the original illustrator, I should say.
He plays into this story, but he's not the original, right? The original is this guy, Ballou. Whose name does not ring through the ages. But Nast, if listeners remember, was the one who kind of codified the elephant and the donkey, mm-hmm. and then also gave us our first notion of who Santa Claus was.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, really played a huge part in cartooning, lodging some big images in our head. But mm-hmm. what do we know about the original Uncle Sam and how he ended up being portrayed in these cartoons in the 1850s?
So it actually has a lot to do with the War of 1812. There was a meat packer named Samuel Wilson who would pack up the meat to send to the troops on the front lines. And each of those packs would have U.S. stamped on the barrels because it was commissioned by the federal government and sent down to U.S. troops. But the troops on the line would refer to the meat as Uncle Sam's meat because they knew it came from this meat packer whose first name was Sam. And that kind of I guess almost a backronym, a retronym for U.S. Yeah. to make it Uncle Sam really does stick. And there is kind of a precedent for having a personification of your nation. You had John Bull, who was the personification of the U.K. that had become very popular in like the 18th century. So it's not surprising that you would get something like this for the United States, especially in this moment when the U.S. is really asserting for the second time its independence from the U.K.
Mm-hmm. One thing about this meat packer, Samuel Wilson, he's from Troy, New York. You read up on him and he says, oh, he was supplying barrels of beef to the United States Army during the War of 1812. And you're like, okay. And then you're like, barrels mm-hmm. of beef? So I started Googling what a barrel of beef is this morning. And I went down a bit of a rabbit hole there. But, you know,
there, like salted or canned meats. I mean,
I know,
yeah,
like
exactly. But a barrel is a lot. But of course, you have to feed the troops. But there was also there's also these reports. There's apparently an inlet in the U.S. Virgin Islands called Barrel of Beef Inlet.
Amazing.
And I guess when you transported meat on ships, often you would just cut up a whole cow and stuff them into a barrel, and then that would feed you for months and months. But I just It was just a phrase where I had to stop and actually be like, wait a minute, a barrel of beef. But there you go.
We will cover this on a future episode, I think. But they're actually in the Spanish-American War. There's this big scandal because the meat that is sent to the troops is called potted meat. It spoils and it makes a lot of the troops sick. And it helps to lead to the founding of the FDA and more oversight of meat later in the early 20th century.
I'm pretty sure I'd be a vegetarian in the 19th century. Pretty sure it would be a hard pass for me.
You're not just going to stick your hand in a big old barrel and see what part of a cow comes out?
Gosh, no.
To murkify this a little bit more, even. Mm-hmm. So, yes, there's these barrels, and they say U.S. on them, and people do a backronym to Uncle Sam. But the name Uncle Sam was still floating in the ether, and there are references to an Uncle Sam going all the way back to the Revolutionary War, including a apparently stanza in the original Yankee Doodle song lyrics that refer to an Uncle Sam who, I think the line is, old Uncle Sam come there to change some pancakes and some onions for lasses cakes to carry home to give his wife and young ones. I don't really know. I didn't see
I didn't
the
understand
right
any
meter
of that.
Or whatever. Pancakes,
something
onions.
Something about food.
Something about food. There you go.
Uncle Sam is clearly a chef.
But that's exactly right, Kelly. I think that basically from the beginning, Uncle Sam was like someone who would provide food to the troops. And whether the Uncle Sam in 1775, who ended up in Yankee Doodle, was a real person or already this sort of imagined like icon of the country, there's a connection between food in those early years as someone who's providing food for the troops. And so maybe that's where then the troops who were seeing these barrels of beef said, oh, U.S. must stand for Uncle Sam because that's the guy who feeds us. But that's where it sort of starts. Mm-hmm. But then, yeah, NAST comes into the picture here. And people originally said, you know, oh, it was Thomas NAST who codified Uncle Sam or invented Uncle Sam. But Thomas NAST was like 11, 12 years old when these first cartoons appeared. But he then, as he begins his career, really does what he seemed to do for a lot of things, which is like he turns these into characters, makes them more appealing, makes them more striking visually. And that's where it really starts to work its way in.
Why do I feel like, though, NAST sort of took the Santa Claus that we all know and love and just, like, made him skinny and gave him a blue coat instead of a red coat?
You're not wrong.
Like,
you're not wrong.
I mean, there's not too much difference. Mm-hmm. If you said Santa Claus and Uncle Sam were brothers, I'd be like, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, but you still have, you know, sort of, like, the piercing blue eyes, this the iconic beard and sort of bushy white hair that almost is like reminiscent of like a George Washington, but yet you have the top hat, which feels a lot like Lincoln, and then of course the red, the white, the blue. I don't know why I always think of like Harlem Globetrotters or something like that, but like the colors and the sort of way in which the colors are being employed, but also that stern look of a finger pointing right at you. And with eyes looking straight at you.
That's the naughty or nice from Santa Claus.
Right. It is.
He's always watching.
Yes, that it gives those kind of like surveillance vibes.
You know what's so interesting about this is that we're talking about two really important eras in the formation of American iconography, right? There's that NAST is generating all of these images for the penny press when political cartoons become a staple of mass politics in the United States. So you get all of these images from the 1860s and 1870s that stay recognizable. But then in the 19-teens and 1920s, you have the rise of brands and modern advertising. And that's when you get like the Coca-Cola Santa Claus. And that's when you get these wartime posters that develop these what feel like very modern images of that become staples of both our politics and our culture.
Hey there, Jody here, and I'm excited to tell you that one of our favorite Radiotopia siblings, Ear Hustle, is back with a brand new season. This is their 13th season, and the show just keeps getting better. Now, I don't know if you know, but Ear Hustle is the show about life inside prison, but it is not your typical prison podcast. Co-hosts Nigel Poor and Erlon Woods have recently been spending time at four California prisons, and now they have a season's worth of funny, surprising, and unforgettable stories to share. In a recent episode, they were able to visit a groundbreaking prison hospice where they spoke to men who are grappling with the reality of dying inside prison. Also coming up this season are stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells, complicated mom-daughter relationships inside prison, and stories of incarcerated people who wonder whether they've become too comfortable behind bars. These are stories about life on the inside told by those who live it. I'll be listening, and I hope you will too. Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
I see. I keep thinking of like the buy, you know, the buy more war bonds, like the World War II posters that are so iconic and inspirational and like filled with the sense of patriotism. You get all of those feelings with the rich texture of colors too. It just it has a very vintage vibe about it that. We become so accustomed to. I don't see, funny enough, I don't really see these, you know, posters too much anymore because I'm, and except in the classroom context, like, but I wonder how much do people come across these kinds of posters now, because it makes sense to see it in a textbook or in the classroom, but we don't have anything like this within a contemporary moment that we're living in, a sort of poster that's a, like a call to duty kind of thing.
Right.
I think it reappears in memes, which is where a lot of these images get produced and reproduced over and over again. But I also feel like in the early 2000s, around the time of the early days of the War on Terror, you started to see kind of revised or tweaked versions of this. Some of them were tongue-in-cheek and some of them were a little less tongue-in-cheek as you started to get that kind of more, both more martial and more everybody fall in line feel around national security.
And I mean, you know, the Obama era brought like there was like a return there, I think, to super striking and simple iconography. Yeah, that like hope poster. And then, you know, I mean, Trump, I think, really like clearly wants to bring back, you know, a lot of these just like really jingoistic, really simple, really straightforward things. But, you know, even I think this set a mold, Kelly, to your point, that like people will return to over and over and over and evoke in whatever way, you know, maybe if it's not the hand-drawn kind of image or character, it's at least that like striking simplicity.
Yeah, I think we'll I forgot about that Obama poster. I feel like I have that with the hope across the top.
You know, that felt like a real return in some way. But you know, to talk a little bit about that, I want you that then really lodged this in the public imagination. So that is largely the work of a man named James Montgomery Flagg, who draws up these posters in World War One. The original ones were, and tell me if you think I'm overthinking this, but the original ones were in July of 1916, and the title under it was, "What Are You Doing for Preparedness?" Right? And it was aimed at, I think, people on the home front and everyone, you know? But the one that I see in my head, and the one that I think people really came to, you know, really associate with Uncle Sam, was this pointing, and it was, "I want you for the U.S. Army. Go to the nearest recruiting station." And I don't know if there's kind of, I mentioned the sort of guilt trip thing at the beginning, but I don't know if there's a distinction there between like Uncle Sam is someone that we can rally around and is telling us to be prepared and that we can all do our part, versus Uncle Sam is like your mean uncle who's looking you in the eye and being like, "What are you going to do?" You know?
Yeah.
And laying a guilt trip on you.
I could not agree more. First, preparedness doesn't look good on a poster. The word itself too long doesn't fit. Ugly word. Way too long. You need simplicity. And the "I want you" is very simple. And you don't even have to ask, like, for what. It is implied what you will be needed for, you know. Because most of the times I feel like I've seen the "I want you." I can't even remember the U.S. Army part, like for U.S. Army, like, or even nearest recruiting station that's like below it. I wouldn't pay attention to that. To me, it's the demand that you yourself are needed for this country.
That you're wanted. Yeah. I think that the I want you language is incredibly powerful, and especially because Uncle Sam is the personification of the nation, that becomes like a call to patriotism that resounds so much more than something like what are you doing for preparedness. There's a reason it becomes iconic.
Yeah. Is there a difference, though, between I want you versus I need you? Am I making too much of that? I don't know.
No, I think all this stuff is, you know, and is it a point versus a, you know, a welcoming thing or like a rallying thing? You know, he doesn't have his fist up in the air like we're doing this together. It's more like it's on you, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot going on here. And I guess if you had to pick a kind of like national mascot, it would still be Uncle Sam, maybe I guess a bald eagle, you know, I think the flag, I suppose. And I do think there is a like Santa Clausy side to Uncle Sam now, right? You see him at like baseball games and on the 4th of July people the Uncle Sam's in the parades on stilts or whatever. But he's not as lovable as a character as maybe you could imagine him. And I think a lot of it has to do with that kind of like wartime laying a guilt trip on you kind of vibe that originally sort of came up with.
Yeah, I want to put a good word in for Lady Liberty is also a personification of the country who has at times like taken on very kind of martial overtones in different depictions, but I think has in some ways just like a wider range in terms of the kinds of messaging that goes on around Lady Liberty. And also, you know, Liberty is right there. And I think that makes a big difference.
Totally. Yeah.
And Columbia.
Mm-hmm. And then there's Columbia, who's the holding the torch. And that's also been a popular figure, especially in the colonial era. But the Lady Liberty thing is super fascinating. And I'm sure there are many, many, dissertations out there about all the dynamics and differences between, I mean, you can just hear it, right? Between Uncle Sam and Lady Liberty. I think we should do a proper episode on Lady Liberty and get into some of that.
Give her her time.
Yeah, and just get into some of that, you know, those gender dynamics and the shifting associations over the years and all that stuff. It's super fascinating. But for now, I think we will leave it there with Uncle Sam. Nicole Hemmer, thanks to you as always.
Thank you, Jody.
And Kelly Carter Jackson, thanks to you.
My pleasure.
Radiotopia.